Blog Talk Radio.
To welcome everyone to Independent Music Showcase on John Talk Radio. I'm your host, John Darlington. This is February the 17th, 2021. My special guests tonight are the Chicago-based rock band Go Time. We have everybody on, and Paul has joined. We have Scott and Steve and Marco and Paul of the band Go Time. And if you're listening to this show if you haven't heard it before, this is one of my favorite bands. You guys are so good, and we've had you guys on so many times that just like a part of this show. And I really appreciate you guys, and I appreciate the music. And the new album is great. I really love it. We want to talk about it tonight. For the listeners out there, the band is Go Time. The album is 8 Ball, and it's their 8th album, I believe.
Is that right, our 8th album, in fact.
Yeah. That's awesome.
It's great to write an album around a concept.
There you go.
Being that it was number 8.
Yeah. Well, so what's a good website if they want to go to right now, somebody listening, they just heard 8 Ball and they want to buy the album. How can they do that?
So actually they can go to iTunes, Amazon, CD Baby. Also, there's links on our Facebook page as well, which is facebook.com/GoTimeBand, to be able to get their hands on such an illustrious release. Or we could say, what is it, the infinity sign upward.
There you go.
It's let's talk about, I want to do the, you know, the intro, and you guys talk about yourselves a little bit, but let's talk about the album being the eighth album. How does that, this album stand out differently from the other seven? And in the feel of it, I know that, you know, I've done the interviews I've done in the last, since last March, have been interesting because of the pandemic and because of how it has affected artists. And I know you guys love to play live, and it's a big part of your makeup as a band. And when the world kind of shut down and artists had to kind of shift gears a little bit to find different ways to get their music out and to also support their art. So did the pandemic have any effect? Let's start off with Scott on this album, and kind of how did it begin? I mean, did the songs come? I know we've talked about this before, but just talk about the genesis of this and how maybe the pandemic may have had some kind of effect on it, if it did.
Well, you know, the funny thing is, pretty much it's a bit of a cycle for me. We get done with an album, we know we're going to play behind it for a year, but after we're learning the album and being out on the scene playing, I start writing for next album. And, you know, just with timing, I was actually just finishing writing as the pandemic hit.
Mm.
So in some way it was, I don't want to say it was fine for us because it sounds just wrong. But, you know, we were done with the songs, or at least the writing phase. We decided what we were going to record, which we recorded actually far more than landed up on the album. But the strange part becomes, how do you promote an album when you can't play live?
Right.
You know, in today's, you know, format. And we're just lucky that there have been a lot of people who have supported us in the past, and we were able to quickly go to those people to start promoting this album. But, you know, it pretty much, at least the writing phase was done as the pandemic hit. So, you know, it was, in some way, it was good timing because it didn't really take us off the scene because everyone was off the scene as we started recording. So
Scott, you said
it feel different this time. You know,
yeah,
it just did because the songs came quick. They felt together really well. They sounded really well produced. It felt pretty effortless this time.
So you said, Scott, that you begin writing the next album. So how has the pandemic affected those songs, or has it?
Well, the funny thing is I've started writing for the new album and have five or six songs in the can, but I'll sit down, you know, as we're promoting this album, and probably be writing anywhere from 60 to 70 songs for the next album as we're starting to really be out on the scene promoting this album. So, you know, it gets to a point where all of a sudden you feel like, okay, we've been playing out for a long time. Let's stop for a while and make an album. You know, I'm just glad how well this one came out. I mean, I really do feel it was probably my best work over our career as a band. But, you know, it's not just me. It's all these guys, because I just bring an outline sketch of a song, and then everybody's involved in not only the orchestration, but you know, different ideas on, you know, let's throw a bridge here, let's slow it down, let's speed it up, you know, which is great. And that's why I love working with these guys, because they're, you know, nothing is really off the table at any point in time. It's really a band effort.
So do you guys, like, if I can remember from the past, Scott, you would send out, you know, files to the guys, and they would hear the music and put their parts together. But do you come together in a studio to record it, or do you do that by sending music in? How did that work? Did you guys get together physically, or was it?
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, actually, it's kind of always been the same process. When I'm done writing, it's like I'll have anywhere, I don't know, from 50 to 70 demos and give these guys about four discs. And we just say, okay, I like this, I don't like this, I don't like this. And we try and whittle it down to, I think this time we might have recorded 25 tracks or 24 tracks. And the album landed being 20 tracks. And, you know, but we did actually physically get together during this time, you know.
Yeah.
But we actually started recording right before the pandemic. So, you know.
Yeah, so it's kind of nice, Isaac, because we did get, we got like four under our belt, and they were mixed, pretty much mixed, other than maybe some of the tinkering with the leads and stuff. So we had like four that we had to listen to and kind of think about and mull over. And then there was kind of a layoff because of the pandemic before we got back together, but we kind of had a direction then because we kind of knew the sound of the four that we did record. It was sounding good, and then when we finally get back together, we were kind of tinkering around a lot with keyboards and, you know, having some fun with that. So by the time after the break we got back together, we were ready to go and put something together nice. So,
yeah, I noticed the keyboard part, and I'm kind of a – I don't know what it is, but kind of a nerd when it comes to that kind of stuff because I just was interested in what kind of keyboards were used. And like when I'm listening to older songs, I know that they're back when I was, you know, in bands and back in the old days, you know, there was the Farfisa organ, there was the Vox Continentals, there was the all that going on, you know, like 96 Tears and the Doors and all this kind of stuff. And so talk about the keyboard part of it into what I would call you guys a guitar driven band. Talk about the introduction. I don't know if you've used them before in the past, but pretty awesome. I really love it.
Well, we've always actually put keyboards sort of in the background, and usually Paul and I do all the keyboard parts. Paul took more of a step forward in that area this time. Some songs he chose not to play guitar on. He just played keyboards. But, you know, actually in our studio, we've got probably like four, you know, sort of multi-use keyboards that have tons of different sounds. But then we've got this great, and this is an odd story. Maybe we've told it before, but on eBay I had bought a, like no one was bidding on this organ. It's like an old Leslie type speaker organ, and I outbid somebody for $12.
Wow!
And Marco and I went to go pick it up, and it was actually at a funeral home, and we transported it back to our studio, and it was the best $12 we had ever spent.
is it like a Hammond type organ?
It is. It's like a big double-decker type organ with the foot pedals, Leslie speaker inside.
The Leslie.
Tube.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it's like an amazing organ. And we sort of, and maybe Marco remembers what the name brand was, but we looked it up at the time. And the Beatles, actually, during the White Album, it was a brand that was made in Chicago.
Wow.
Oddly enough. And the Beatles, when they were making the White Album, had one transported over to the UK. And then I think the Who had also used it on, like, Tommy and Who's Next or something.
Wow.
But we had no idea. We just bought a $12 organ at a funeral home and transported it home. That was pretty much the story.
And John, the funeral home director that we met that night was so enthralled at getting rid of that organ that he was willing to throw in the viewing couch that was in the parlor where it sat.
Oh, boy, you guys could have like a side thing going on, you know, like funeral. Yeah, funeral home going on.
The funniest thing that happened, though, that evening was when Marco and I went to go pick it up. Because we actually just got an address, so we didn't really know where we were going. And we showed up, and we're like, "Oh my God, this is a funeral home!" And the director comes out, and he's smoking, and he's like, "Oh, you guys, the guy's here for the organ." And Marco's first comment was, "Hey, you should stop smoking those things. They're gonna kill you."
And,
I just
funny.
Remember almost falling down in laughter in the parking lot of a funeral home. So,
did he get the humor of that one? Probably.
He did. The guy was really cool, John. He was even explaining because it was a family business and it had a crematorium like hooked to it and all that. It was kind of like the movie Phantasm, where Scott and I show up and it looks like we might not come back out. So, but we fired that thing up after we slid it down the stairs, kind of Marx Brothers style, into the recording studio, and then Scott fired it up, and the first thing you smell is that dust, like you smell on tube amps and stuff that haven't been turned on in a long time. But
right.
Scott has used it to our benefit. And but like we were talking about the keys on the album, that's a lot of that is Paul Schmidt. Paul did an amazing job of adding all that layering in there. So,
hi, Paul.
Hi there.
How's it going?
Good evening.
Good. So, well, talk about keyboards, Paul. What are some of your influences and people like in the past or maybe at current that are keyboard influencers? There may be some rock songs or rock bands from the past that influenced you.
I think I'd have to say the number one, the one that inspired me probably the most for this album was Deep Purple. John Lord, I think. I can't possibly emulate that kind of skill, but that sound influences me for sure.
Yeah, it was always kind of cool. I agree with that. I mean, it's a fact that there was so much, into the guitar work, and then these keyboards would come in. Led Zeppelin, all these bands would bring in their keys, and it was like this eerie, mystical sound. And especially since now we know that the organ came from a funeral home, and maybe it was the one the Beatles used, and they sent it back to Chicago. You never know.
To a funeral home.
Could be.
But that's really awesome. I mean, so let's start off. I know when we do these shows, sometimes I forget to do a lot of the technical things. So let's let you guys introduce yourselves, and so that people can one of the things that I've done, well, I've been doing this for a while, since 2008, and I always want people to know about, you know, the personality and behind the music. The music speaks for itself, but it's done by people, and you know, a little bit about you guys. So let's start off with Scott. Just kind of talk about, you know, who you are and how you got started in music and what some of your influences were in the past and some what they are now. And then we'll go on down to Steve, Marco, and Paul.
You know, the great part, as you said, the music, the people are behind the music. It makes me think that I need to go to Soylent Green type land and say it's made of people right after you say that. But, you know, that's a whole different thing. As you can tell, Go Time's not a very serious – I mean, we're serious at what we do, but we're great guys to hang out with, I mean, you know, outside of that aspect. For me, I started playing music very young. I had a writing partner for a very long time, and early on we figured it out pretty young. I mean, like, you know, the grade school type time, like, you got to learn how to write songs, otherwise, you know, you're just the guy who noodles around on guitar. My interests were always pretty diverse. I liked classic rock when I was young, but I also, you know, I had this great interest in alternative rock from like the early day one, you know, seeing things like MTV's 120 Minutes where you had people like the Smithereens and the Replacements and Husker Du. And I was like, wow, that is great. That is a great direction to go in. But I find now that since I mix and produce the albums, I pretty much will listen to anything and just take little parts and pieces and say, like, you know, I may not like this song, but this is genius, you know, or this was mixed nicely, or this, you know, all that kind of stuff hits me more now because I really tear apart everything I listen to, you know, not only in for some form of you know, inspiration, but also, you know, on the level of being a music producer where, you know, I have to mix records to sound different or sound cool or whatever. And, yeah, I've always had a love of guitar, but, I mean, I do play other instruments as well, like keyboard, auto harp, mandolin. I played bass in a different band in Chicago. And over the last couple of years, I've done tons of acoustic shows. And actually doing the acoustic shows when you don't have a band behind you, you know, it forces you to work a lot harder, not only on your singing, but actually being a better guitarist at what you do. And that actually, I think, really helped me on this album because I found myself really pushing different limits I never kind of did before. So, and then, of course, you know, I'm a sucker for a nice amp, a nice tube amp like a Vox amp or for years I've used Music Man amps. And, you know, most of my guitars that I use most of the time are Rickenbacker guitars, which are
right.
Pretty distinctive all their own. So.
So what do you use, Scott, when you do your acoustic set?
For years I've been using Takamine, like, wide-body concert guitars. They've just got, it's very funny. They don't necessarily sound great when you're playing them acoustically, but when you plug them in, which pretty much you're doing at any venue, they sound fantastic. And they stay in tune, and I mean, you see a lot of people. I think Springsteen only uses really Takamine guitars most of the time when you see him these days. But yeah, they're not flashy, but you plug them in, they sound great, and they stay in tune. So, you know, you can't beat them for that purpose.
Yeah, that's cool, and I think that's kind of interesting. You know, doing the solo thing. Is that kind of like, you know, it is a big difference because you have the band behind you and then you're out there by yourself. So does that like draw from a different vein of music that you like, Scott, knowing that you have to perform acoustically? Do you do a lot of your own stuff or do you do a lot of covers? How does that work?
I actually mix it up. You know, as you know, probably everywhere in the United States, there have been thousands of breweries, microbreweries that have opened up, and all of them are looking for some type of acoustic entertainment, and it actually gives me the ability, and, you know, most people are going out for the evening, want to hear somebody doing something that they kind of recognize, and I will do a few things that people may recognize during the evening. I'll slide in some code time stuff, but I think the funnest part for me is picking really weird things that people may not want to hear or may have some, you know, slight remembrance of. Like it's not, you know, odd to hear me do, you know, like Magic by Pilot, which is not probably the first thing that comes to people's minds. Maybe some deep cuts from Nick Lowe. You know, who was it? Yeah, I mean, just like a lot of odd sort of off-kilter stuff, which actually Marco's seen me a couple times, as well as Paul. So, I mean, I think they could probably actually, yeah, I'm all over the map acoustically. But for me, it's a lot of fun because I don't have to take it as serious. Even though I'm working harder, I don't have to take it as seriously, you know?
Mm. Yeah, that's gotta be, it just, you know, I have so much respect for people that do that, because it's you and it's your talent and it's like right there. I've always kind of felt for the musician that's trying to kind of entertain, but also to, you know, play seriously. And there's a lot going on sometimes. So is that hard sometimes, Scott, like the, I don't know.
I will tell you,
crowd
it's hard. Oh, it's hard work, you know, because quite often, you know, when you do that, you see a lot of acoustic players, and all of a sudden they're just sort of doing a rhythmic thing, and no matter what song they're playing, you're like, okay, the guy's playing acoustic, you know, and then they just zone out after the first song. But it's harder to keep attention. It's harder to win people over, and you got to work a hell of a lot harder than you would normally. You know, like quite realistically, I can get a little lazy or drop a chord here or there, and, you know, Paul's right behind me, backing me up, and, you know, he's going to fill the holes, and you know, not that many people are going to notice, you know, unless if it's a colossal screw-up. When you're just there with your guitar, you know, there's nothing to hide behind. You better be pretty spot-on and keeping it together.
Yeah, and I would imagine, you know, it's got to be a great feeling, but I also know it's got to be a challenge because you probably have people yelling out requests and things.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, I don't know if you get free bird or probably a lot of weird stuff like that, you know.
Well,
but,
the secret is when someone yells free bird, you take out your wallet, you stick your hand in it, and come out giving them the finger, and you say, I just gave you free bird.
I like that. I've never heard that one yet. That's a good one. Yeah. That's pretty cool. So that was Scott. Steve.
Yes.
Hi.
Hello.
Introduce yourself and talk about your influences and let the people know all about Steve.
Okay, sure. So Steve, the drummer from No Time. I don't know, been playing drums since I got my first little toy kit for my first communion. And since then, dinked around, kind of high school bands, that kind of thing. And then we had, prior to that with Scott, Marco and I were in the band Prairie Town. You know, it was from the early 90s for 27, 8 years. And then here we are.
Flaming
No
Tailpipes.
And then Flaming Tailpipes for a couple years there. But never did get my solo career off the ground, though, John, because, you know, people just don't want to come to a bar to hear a three-hour drum solo. I gave it a shot, but it just doesn't resonate. It's just kind of tough to do, but anyway. So,
take request. That would be good.
right, exactly. John Bonham, I could do a little something. I don't know, but as far as influences, you know, I like power pop and rock, so, like, probably one of my heaviest influences is Buddy Carlos. You know, I love that kind of drumming style.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of what I'm all about, so I really like that, and that's really it in a nutshell. Yeah.
I got a couple of questions. One is a Bunny Carlos question. Now, is he still a part of the band and just doesn't tour, or how does that go? Because I know he was out of the band,
yeah.
And he tried to sue to get back in the band so he could get, you know, money from the songs. But I always, Steve really loved his drumming too. I always thought it was one of those things where, you know, you don't really notice he's there for a while. Because he puts it all together and it's not flashy or anything, but man, when he needs to do something, he can really
bring it out.
Yeah, I really enjoy his drumming too. I think it's awesome. Yep. I know he's out, you know, I follow him on social media and, but I think the Steve doing a solo drum thing, like an acoustic set, that would be a good skit for like Saturday Night Live or something. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Sure
you just
would.
Set
like
your drums up.
Instead of the cowbell, it'd be the drums. Yeah.
could,
there you go.
Yeah, to play every song, you know, that they request, but just from the drums part of
but
it.
But just
the music.
Drums. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
You know, the amazing thing I got to say about Go Time is really Steve is – at the center of it, in the heart and soul. Drumming wise, I mean, sure, I see Bunny Carlos, but I also see some Keith Moon in there. And I got to say, if you ever listen to records, whenever Paul's not doing something on guitar, or I'm not doing something on guitar, or there's not a vocal going on, Steve fills these holes that are just, yeah, he understands how to work in stuff between everything else going on, which is just amazing.
Oh, it is amazing. I mean, I'm not a drummer. I played bass, and when I was in a band once, the drummer, I don't know if I told you guys this before, but he liked to play keyboards and saxophone, so he said he was going to teach me to play the drums so he could do that. And in practice before the gig, which is pretty weird, but so he taught me a 16th beat, and I just learned, you know, from him and from listening, like you were saying, just to be, keep the beat, you know, the metronome part, keep everybody together. And then if you can do some other stuff, that's cool. But when you do it, you better come back to where, you know, you're making. And I think that's, and I do agree with you, Scott. Steve does a great job on the drumming, and you have your own style. It stands out, and it's really you're pretty groovy, dude.
Thank you. Yeah, it's kind of a balancing act because you want to do. My goal is like do something interesting, but don't get too busy, so that you become so noticed that you know it's irritating. You know, so that's kind of balanced.
I know a couple of drummers like that. I've always thought, you know, hey, you know, and another thing that it's, you know, I like to talk, and Scott knows this, you know, the gear talk part of it, but the drummer has to blend in. I mean, you the sound has to be just right, and most drummers take some time to tune things up and get things going just where they want it to be and to fit perfectly within the groove of the band. And sometimes when you go hear a live show, that's not always the case. You know, the drummers are way too loud or, you know, but that is an art to keep it within, you know, the confines of the band and get all the instrumentation just blended perfectly. So that's cool.
Yeah.
Cool
well,
stuff.
The frightening part about being a drummer is like the club scenarios where it's a house kit. So you just don't know what you're walking into.
Mm.
So it's like, well, welcome. Here's the kit. Good luck.
Yeah. How does that work? Have you ever had like a nightmare kit?
Absolutely. Oh my God. Yeah. Like just pedals falling apart, like literally going to try to find a store where we could buy equipment prior to the show or try to make quick repairs with duct tape and, you know, whatever we could find. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. I can imagine that. That would be quite a challenge sometimes. Well, that's Steve, the drummer. Marco, you're
up. Yes, sir. Well, John, my history actually, I didn't really start playing anything, a little acoustic guitar in college, and then I found out how difficult that was really going to be. So, like a lot of my course study, I dropped it and waited until my post-college years, actually, until I met Steve and another guy, Paul, and we were all playing ball together, and we talked music constantly. So long story short, it's like, hey, you know, I said, well, I got a space, a garage, basically, you know, if you guys want to come over and we'll just kind of fool around, which Paul played guitar, and Steve obviously being the drummer, which may be the bassist. So so that was called the Flaming Tailpipes, and we played a few places around the city and the south side, and just kind of hashed it, you know, some basic tunes out, did a few covers and stuff like that until we actually graduated to Stevie's parents' basement, became our local recording studio, and Paul, the one lead guitar guy and did most of the songwriting and singing, brought Scott into the group, and that became Prairie Town, which we were for years, and Scott was barely shaving, and the first time I heard him play, I like looked at him and I said, dude, how old are you? And he said, whatever it was. I'm like, man, you play like an old man. I mean, in a complimentary way, you know, he played like a guy who had been influenced by some, you know, guys back from the 60s, 70s, but a little blend of everything and then his own style. And I'm just like, guys, your age, usually don't, you know, it's usually more guitar hero stuff. And he had none of that, just a real melodic feel and what to add and what not to add. So so we were Prairie Town for a bunch of years, and then that thing kind of disbanded, as things sometimes do, and then came along and Scott said, well, the three of us, you know, maybe we should start something new, and it took us a while to find a name. Stevie came up with Go Time, and then we did auditions, which is a whole nother show, John, if you ever had time for that one, the Go Time auditions.
I'll book it. That sounds good.
Oh, you got to, yeah. Steve,
oh, it's
got
funny.
That.
I'll tell you
Steve,
that.
Yeah, Scott, we did it at the recording studio where we play and rehearse and record at Scott's. And, I mean, it's unbelievable when you put ads out seeking something specific, and he even sent demos out and stuff like that. And the response we got, Steve could tell you. And he, so eventually it came down, and we finally got Paul out of all that.
Thank God.
Which was, yeah, thank God.
Amen.
That was, that was so, I don't know, what year are we in now, guys? Paul, do you know what year we're in now?
Is it 10?
08 we started.
Oh, oh God.
All right, you got, yeah, Stevie, you got it.
So do that math.
So I got to say from, and Jen, you've seen it because we've sent you the material, I think, from way back. The progression of this band has been, I mean, just amazing. And, you know, with Scott's influence, sending us 1,000 songs at a time and saying, here, cull this down to 20 or 24 that you like. And we're like, and I can hear the marbles rolling in Steve and Paul's head. Like, seriously, because Scott's very prolific with the amount of material, and that's just increasingly gotten better, so it's increasingly harder to throw material out that we don't think might, you know, be good for recording, so we leave a lot of
right.
stuff on the table nowadays, but it's a good problem to have, and we've all just advanced as musicians. I mean, you know, Paul is doing his thing. You heard the keyboards added to this last album has given a lot different layered effect and more of this orchestral sound. And Scott's songwriting has gotten more complex, and the stuff Steve's got one of the probably the best ears in the band just to hear. I don't even know how he does because he's half deaf from being with us all these years in these small rooms. But
true.
But he does have a great feel for just the little things, which make all the difference. And Paul has a lot of the you know, the breaks and the bridges, and it just keeps advancing. I think, you know, like I said, the idea is nobody wants to let the other guy down. So we've all kind of kept stepping up our games. And I think 8-Ball is, and I keep telling Scott, I know it's hard for him doing a lot of the main songwriting. He keeps going, what do you think? And I go, I do think it's even better. The Midway was the album before this, and I thought that was great, but I think this is it's better and different, which is the two things I think he was shooting for and we're both shooting for. So it's really like I said, it's a group effort, but it kind of has been a journey. So it's been a weird journey this last year and something, because we were really kind of hitting it live, John, in Chicago. We had a lot of great gigs right before everything shut down at everywhere from Martyrs to Montrose Saloon. We played a bunch of packed shows there with some really good bands in Chicago. And that was the last place we played before they shut the water off. So it's just kind of been a waiting game, and we've been working on this. So and then hopefully get a chance to play it out sometime in 2021 would be nice.
Yeah. I know around here, guys, I don't know about there, but I'm starting to see things come up, like bands starting to schedule things around the end of summer, somewhere in there, around mid to end of summer. I see gigs starting to pop up. I don't know if you guys see that also, but it's starting to free up a little
bit. Very little. Yeah. Very little at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. Not a lot, but I do see things, and you know that can always be canceled and everything too. But I do know the emphasis on playing live is just amazing. So Marco, as far as influences, who were some of your major influences for playing the bass?
Definitely guys like McCartney, you know, Entwistle with the Who, kind of a lead bass player. Somebody like Jack Bruce. You know, and Scott's thrown me some guys who I guess I really didn't listen closely enough, but they teach you things that I think, like Steve was talking about his drumming, where a lot of things less is more, and that holds true for the bass as well as the drums, you know, the rhythm section in general. Space is a big thing in music, and Scott's taught me a lot about that, and that's as important as, you know, playing multiple notes. So I think definitely those guys, you know, you try to, like you talked about the drumming, John, trying to make that sound part of the whole yet separate. It's really an art form. And I think, and Scott's helped me out a lot with that and with bass lines and stuff in general. It just, I think that's where the art is, you know, like Scott's looking for the whole thing put together, but he's listening to all the pieces. So, it's interesting. It's great. It's really it really keeps us going.
Yeah, you named some pretty heavy duty people there as bassists, but how about the gear? What are you playing through right now, or what bass guitar are you playing?
Yeah, Fender Jazz. I mean, I've got a P bass that's sitting there gathering dust, but got a couple jazz, the newer one this last year, which I've been, thanks to my wife and Scott's collaboration, I got for Christmas, which is awesome. I love the jazz bass. I love a little bit narrower fretboard, a little faster, and just you can. It just sounds good with just about any style of music. So was playing through like a Hartke rig with this acoustic 210, the Hartke 4x10. And then I bought this GK 4x10 to kind of add to just having it at home and taking it to play out, John. But I got to tell you, I overestimated my strength or underestimated the weight of the thing, because it's as heavy as that damn organ we bought for the funeral home.
Yeah.
So I'm rethinking that for when we do play out again, to make a more portable, lightweight bass combo with like this Behringer head that Scott's got to take out and play with. Because, man, I'll tell you, depending on where you get to park and load in, as the boys know, it can be difficult sometimes with the heavy stuff.
Yeah, that's a big thing. And I know also it's like with the bass, you know, that's the first thing I hear since I played the bass for a while. And it's when I hear a song, it's the bass, drums, and then everything else wraps around that. And you named some pretty good influences there. So thank you, Marco. How about
John,
you, Paul?
John, I'm still trying to pull him into the dark side. I personally play a Thunderbird.
Yep. Yeah.
Man, that thing has got a great sound.
There,
as a bass, that thing sounds so natural.
You know, I've never played one of those. I have played just the regular Gibson. What is it? The bass with the smaller neck on it.
The Grabber.
Oh, I'm not sure. Is it the SG?
That's
sure.
Yeah.
It's got a funny, it's like EVO1 or something weird like that, I think.
And it's a smaller bass, so it's easier, you know, to kind of play. But I also have a Jazz actually right beside me, and they are really nice to play. But, it's an art, and you guys do a great job. Man, it's good to hear the individual parts, but it's also you guys do such a good job of bringing it together. So now it's Paul's turn.
So I started playing guitar pretty early, started playing guitar in high school like a lot of people, and actually picked up drums some about the same time, but usually focused on guitar. And about then started forming various cover bands, and then started playing originals. But at that time I was big into just classic rock in general, and taking deep dives into Led Zeppelin and Rush and bands like that. But pretty much any of the bands that the other gentlemen have already mentioned, I've been totally into, and I love them. And I've just tried to branch out from there and to go through all my influences. That would be a trip. That'd be a trip down the rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. But it's anything from prog metal to yacht rock. So I don't know. It could be anything.
So what are some of the things, Paul, you're listening to right now? Like some of the groups or the music that you've listened to recently?
Yeah, that's there are some. Well, all I can think of right now is I listen to Ghost a lot, and some other guitar bands like Queens of the Stone Age. I know Radiohead hasn't put anything out for a while, but I love Radiohead. And let's think about it. I'd have to think about that one. There's because there's a lot, but try to keep my ears open.
Yeah, how about gear with you? What do you play?
So most of my playing is through a very typical amp, the Fender Hot Rod Deluxe. But for guitar, when we're recording, most of my rhythm tracks I do on a Fender, on my Fender Jazzmaster. But when I do leads, I record leads separately, and when I do them, it's kind of just any humbucker guitar I have lying around. I'll use anything for leads.
Well, how many guitars do you have?
Several. More than, I'm trying to think here. So, like, me and Scott and I are both kind of have guitar acquisition syndrome, but more than a dozen, less than two dozen, I lost count.
Yeah, I was going to say sometimes you
so
can
I'm
put
sorry.
Them in categories.
No, I'm
of
sorry,
12.
I was wrong. It's about a dozen, probably. It's about a dozen, probably.
That's
it's a
see, that's,
it's just a sickness, John.
It's under control. It's under a dozen,
I'm under
guys.
20 right now.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, that's amazing because it can be to a point where it's like, you're searching for that lost chord like the Moody Blues. You know, you're looking for that sound. You're looking for that
exactly.
That tone. It's like you got. It's right there. I almost got it. My guest tonight, you're listening to John Talk Radio, Independent Music Showcase, and we do this every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock, and we have guests on, and we play music, and we do all kinds of stuff, and we also have a 15-minute music break, which we have every Tuesday and Thursday. If you haven't listened to that, that's a kind of a new thing last year. We put together that we play music. And one of the cool things, guys, about this pandemic has been I've gotten a boatload of music. I mean, a lot of people are creating music. So I'm getting a lot of really great stuff. And it's coming in from a really cool place because, you know, I was asking Scott, who does the majority of the writing, if the pandemic affected you in your writing musically or lyrically, and man, I'm getting some stuff that, you try to find a silver lining, you try to find something good about this pandemic. Well, art, I think there has been a vein of art that has come out of this, and, maybe from a place that people wouldn't have been able to get to without, you know, the challenges that we face. And, so I play a lot of that music and play a lot of really cool stuff, including Go Time, which is who we have on tonight. My favorite guys to have on. So you're always cool to have.
Thank you for putting us on the 15. That was awesome this week.
Yeah.
You're welcome. It's a lot of fun to do that. And I found out that, you know, people have, they can listen to 15 minutes and, you know, it's like so much going on that people can do that. And it's like, I try to get what I'm doing now. I don't know if I told you guys this, I don't know if I did or not, but I had an experience. You guys remember, it goes back to my day back in the 60s, Question Mark and the Mysterians and, 96 mm-hmm. Tears and all that. Yeah. Well, I've got some music from Question Mark. He called me. Did I tell you guys this? I don't know if I did.
Yeah,
or not.
Well,
maybe.
You even wrote about it, I think, John.
Yeah, I actually did write an article on it. And Question Mark called me and listened to the show before. And I'd interviewed Bobby Balderrama, who's his lead guitar player in Mysterians. And he called and wanted to do a series of articles and shows and stuff, and he gave me guys music that had never been released. They did an album. The album was bought by Ray Charles's record company. Ray Charles passed away. The family locked down everything, so the album never got out, and he gave me some songs to play. And so that's the kind of stuff that keeps me going. It's like that we, and I'm kind of plugging the show a little bit there, but with playing that kind of stuff, and I like to throw, you know, the new stuff that you guys doing and some of this old stuff that pretty cool underground stuff. So that's the 15-minute music break. But I want to play a song and then we'll come back and we only have, 10 minutes left. So let's play. I want to play. I'm going to pick a song to play. You guys okay with that?
Sure.
I'm going to play Planned Withdrawal.
We trust you,
and,
John.
Okay. And my guests are Go Time from Chicago. And guys, thanks so much. It's just so cool talking to you guys. I don't know how many years we've done this, but it's been a few.
Yep,
a lot.
Ooh, thanks, John. Yeah, appreciate the support.
Well, let's play this song. We'll come back and wrap up the interview. You're listening to Independent Music Showcase, and we'll be right back after this. John Talk Radio Independent Music Showcase. I'm your host, John Darlington. We do this every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. Special guests tonight are Go Time, a Chicago band. Their latest release is 8 Ball. It's on iTunes, Amazon, CD Baby, and you can go to their Facebook page. And can you link in to purchase it there, Scott?
You can. Yeah,
okay.
You definitely can. Good song choice, by the way. Now, that was a weird song. Where actually I don't think Paul played any guitar, but he only played keyboards.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean, that was very different for us to really, you know, do that type of song. But it did happen occasionally on this album.
Yeah, it's a great song. I mean, what would you say, would you have any influences on that? Or, I mean, would you just say it was just, you know, part of Go Time? But could you look back and see where that was influenced by anyone?
Not a clue.
Yeah. Well, it's good though, man. It's different, and it's really good. So we just got a couple of minutes left, guys. I just want to thank you. You know, it's been great to follow your career, to play your music these years, and definitely one of these days, you know, I'm going to end up there. I want to come up and. I love Chicago, and to come up and listen to you guys when the pandemic breaks and the sun shines and all the people come out of their houses like, you know, like the mole people, you know. It's like, I can imagine. I don't know about you guys, but I mean, as pent up and as blocked in as everyone's been, when they finally like lift the gates and let everyone out, it probably will be pretty interesting.
It'll be a free-for-all, for sure.
Yeah, and Go Time will be playing right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's go with let's go down the line, Scott, Steve, Marco, and Paul, and just what you have in closing you'd like to say to the fan base or to people out there. Start off with Scott.
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for the support, and the press has always been great to us, and thank God for you. I mean, we not only, you know, we love doing the show because it's not only great to talk with you, but it's a lot of fun. We appreciate the support, but, I mean, you know, obviously we talked off air for quite a while prior to the show, and you know, we've always had this kismet moment with you, yeah, and I mean, by far, you're a good friend of ours, and we appreciate everything you've done along the way.
Well, thank you. I feel the same. Steve?
Yeah, I would just echo the same thing, John, about thanks so much for the support. We appreciate that, and anybody that comes out to see our shows, and hope you enjoy the new album. I mean, every time we embark on recording a new CD, I'm thinking, how can we possibly make this better? And then I'm surprised, oh my God, this is really good. So
yeah.
Really,
who made that record?
That's pretty cool.
That's
well,
awesome.
Honestly, the fridge full of beer in Scott's studio, that helps us out quite a bit.
Yeah, that yeah, a little lubrication. That's always good.
Yeah, yep.
Okay, Marco?
John, I totally echo what those guys said. Thanks for keeping the flame lit, because it's not just us. I mean, there's tens of thousands of bands like us and musicians, and you know, we don't necessarily get played on the radio all the time or anything like that, but we're out there doing it, and especially creating new stuff. So people like you that help put that out there for us, and it's just, it's awesome. Can't thank you enough. And if you don't mind, we'd like to come and just sleep on the porch in Mount Sterling there, John.
we've talked about Dayton is like an hour away. We could go to the Oregon District and go to where all the bands played, and Guided by Voices and where they played. That would be great. Paul.
I just want to thank everybody for listening to our music and listening to music that's not whatever is popular on the radio, not whatever is popular on the radio right now. And thank you for coming to our shows. And yep. If I could just add, I have a couple more sites that we're on. I think we're also on SoundCloud and Bandcamp.
Okay.
Yes, both.
So you can check us out there too.
Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much. The album is great. I'm listening to it. It takes me a while to get through. I like to listen at least two or three times all the way through, and before I can really feel the music. But I love it. Everything that I've heard is great. You guys have done a great job, and I really appreciate you guys as friends and being on the show. And just keep doing it, man. Just keep.
You know.
Yep.
You know. The key is it's hard to listen to our albums because they're so long. But we're like the Walmart of music. We deliver value.
Well, you guys just keep doing what you're doing, because it's really good. Thank you so much. Thank you. And I want to thank the listeners that have kept this thing going since 2008. And we're going to keep going. Thanks, guys. Have a great evening. Stay warm.
Thank you.
The pandemic will
left
over these days. And we'll talk to everybody later. And thanks for listening. And good night.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.